The markets. We just can't get enough of them.
Markets are the drivers of your wealth and investment strategy.
Welcome to Magic Markets with your co-hosts, The Finance Ghost and Mohammed Nallah.
Together, we have more than 25 years of combined experience in the markets.
For those looking to take their market and business knowledge to the next level, we offer Magic Markets Premium. Our recent research reports in Magic Markets Premium have included technology giants like Netflix, Alphabet, and Amazon, as well as Intel as it fights back for a turnaround in the semiconductor industry. We've also covered wide moat players like MasterCard and Coca-Cola, along with many, many more, all available for a subscription of 99 Rand per month. Visit magic-markets.com to take your investment knowledge to the next level. Welcome to episode 189 of Magic Markets. Thank you for joining us. It's great to have you here. I think we've had a couple of really interesting shows in the past couple of weeks. We've covered stuff like how to research stocks and how to prepare for a big sell-off in the market. And today we're going to be talking about how to construct a portfolio and what some of those strategies look like. And you'll have an extra voice on the call today, but not someone who is new to Magic Markets by any means. Craig Antoni of Anbro, you've joined us several times on this podcast. It's always really lovely to have you. And of course, Mo, doing this with me every week as you do. So Craig, thank you so much for joining us on the show. And I know that Mo and I are really excited to chat to you today and just get some insights around how you guys build the portfolios that you have at Anbro.
Well, hi there, guys. Good to be here again. And thanks for having me. Always enjoy these conversations and, you know, looking forward to getting stuck in.
Yeah, Craig, I think that's it's always really great to have you on the show, and specifically at around a time like this, because markets have been remarkably volatile. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, Ghost and I were talking about, you know, how do you prepare for market correction? We had that market correction, and now we've got the market pushing on again, close towards record highs again. And the reason why this is such a timely conversation is, in and amongst all of that volatility, it's really important to get your psychology right in the markets as well, because sometimes you've got FOMO and you feel as though you've got to jump into the market. That leads to poor decision-making. At other times when the market's selling off, you know, you're terrified by the fear and you arguably don't deploy your capital in a very optimal manner. And so, Craig, that's what we want to try and unpack on this particular show, is just, you know, what are some of the strategies you use at Anbro when constructing those portfolios? And I'm going to jump in with maybe the first question of the day, which is to say, we know that Anbro has a whole bunch of different portfolios, different strategies out there. We've covered your brands portfolio, for example, that focuses on some of the world's most valuable brands. You've got Dynamic Compound, and that's a portfolio that's very income focused. And then you've also got the Anbro Unicorn portfolio, which is really also quite interesting. But a lot of these strategies also talk to different investors. And so maybe the first question for me for the day is this really around personality, you know, or, you know, how do you craft the fit between your various portfolios and the investors when you have that initial conversation with them? I think that's maybe the starting off point. And then from there on, we can move on to how do you go about building that portfolio and deploying the capital?
Sure, Mo, it's a very good question. And I think I'll answer it by saying that it really is a personality thing for one. And it also is a wealth creation tool for another. And it really stems upon, you know, first of all, what it is that an individual investor is looking for. The other thing is, you know, what is that individual investor's risk appetite or risk tolerance? And I think that's important for people individually to understand. Now, some people are naturally more or less tolerable of risk or volatility than others. You know, if you look at my wife, for example, you know, she's a total adrenaline junkie. She's just easily jump out of an airplane as she would, and, you know, walk down the aisle at the grocery store and buy groceries. I, on the other hand, am not like that. I'm terrified of heights. Horses couldn't grab me up to my own rooftop, never mind, you know, jumping out of a plane. And in investing terms, you know, one's got to think about it like that. You know, the higher the volatility or perceived risk, the higher the potential return. And obviously, you know, one individual is very different from another when it comes to the ability to withstand that sort of volatility. And hence, you know, you've got to construct your portfolio, you know, or investment, or have an investment plan in such a way that, you know, not only mitigates the overall risks, but also appeals to your investment style and your own risk tolerance.
Craig, I want to jump in here because, you know, with me, for example, I look at this almost in terms of my own personality being a little bit schizophrenic when it comes to that. I'm an adrenaline junkie. I like jumping out of planes. I like climbing up high spaces. And when I come to my money, however, I'm a lot more conservative. And so I think that's also part of the discussion, is that, you know, when it comes to a person's personality versus their actual financial objectives? And again, maybe a question here to kind of just leverage off that first question is that surely this is also linked to a person's disposable income, where they are in their life cycle, for example. So if you're early out in your career, you've got lots of disposable income, you can add that into the portfolio versus someone that's looking to start building a portfolio that gives them a little bit more passive income. And maybe just talk to us about reconciling those differences in terms of life cycle, where someone is mentally in their space versus their personality construct.
Sure. Well, I think one simple way to look at it is to look at, say, you know, risk profile. And you touched on that, Mo, with regards to, you know, stage of life or life cycle and investing cycle. You know, obviously, the most important thing to consider is the amount of risk you're able to take depending on where you are at your stage of life. Now, simply put, cash in the bank is often considered, you know, the least risky investment you can get. And if you look at, say, the average money market fund in South Africa, that has returned about 7% per annum on average over the last 20 years. The JSE Top 40, on the other hand, has averaged about 13% per annum over the last 20 years. If you take that into the US context, investing in things like short-term treasury bills in the States would have returned roughly 1% per annum over the last 20 years. Investing in the S&P 500, average of about 10.5% per annum. So again, you know, what I'm really trying to illustrate here is, irrespective of your level of risk tolerance, in order to generate returns which do grow your capital over time, whether it be inflation as a target or ultimate retirement as a target, you do have to take some level of risk on board. So in other words, you know, sitting in a money market account for your entire investment career is not going to get you, you know, the returns and ultimately the retirement comfort you would like. On the other hand, you know, sitting in a highly, you know, volatile, high beta portfolio a couple of years just prior to retirement is going to give you far more anxiety than it should, you know, for someone at that stage of life. So the way we like to look at it is to say, well, we have three portfolios at Anbro. You know, you've touched on them, Mo, when you talk about things like, say, brands. Brands is what we consider the quintessential quality portfolio that sits in the middle of the risk spectrum. You know, that is a portfolio made up of stocks which have, you know, pretty much survived what the market and what the world has thrown at it from, you know, from time to time, whether it be COVID, the dot-com crash, you know, emerging market crisis, whatever you, you know, sort of market fall you want to look at. And they, these sorts of companies have come out better for it. Then, you know, on the other side, you have the ANCOM portfolio, which is, you know, more focused around stocks that pay dividends. And these dividends are, you know, concentrated not just simply around high-paying dividend stocks, but also stocks that grow their dividend payouts quickly. You know, in the context of the two, you know, we would consider the ANCOM portfolio to be more conservative-like. You know, these are the sorts of companies that, again, due to their sheer, you know, strength and moat and strong balance sheets, have been able to stand the test of time and pay cash flow to shareholders for a long time. Unicorn, on the other side, as you said, Mo, is the you know, highly sort of blue sky, you know, I would say more volatile portfolio to, you know, to the others. It has the potential for life-changing returns, but along those lines, rather, you can have some gut-wrenching volatility. You know, so what we try and do is, you know, try and suss out, you know, where individual investors are in their life stage, where they are in their headspace, and, you know, try and think, I think, recommend a portfolio which constructed on, say, those three aspects in perhaps differing weights and exposure.
Yeah, I think that's something I've always really enjoyed in the discussions we've had. And obviously in many of the prior podcasts we've had with you and with Justin as well, you know, we've talked to some of the specific stocks in these portfolios. So I guess that comes down to, once you've got your kind of top down, this is the overarching mandate of the portfolio. This is what we're looking for. It's either quality or it's yield focused or it's growth focused. And Craig, I love the comment on how risk averse you are, because I also know some of the growth stocks that you invest in. You might not get your adrenaline done by doing all these crazy things with your missus, but I have seen you, you know, take some pretty interesting positions in the market that often work out really well. So there's some adrenaline there for sure. But I guess that brings me to the question, which is, you know, how do you really pick what's going into these portfolios? Do you use stock screening tools? You know, portfolio construction is kind of a top-down, bottoms-up analysis. Mo, we talked about something similar literally last week on how to research stocks. Is it quite similar in how to build a portfolio? You start with a top-down mandate and then you start screening for the stocks you're looking for?
Yes, I mean, it pretty much starts like that. I mean, what we do at Anbro is we said, well, you know, how we sort of built the business initially is we said, well, you know, let's look at, you know, what we would consider to be some of the biggest global trends, if you like, you know, whether they be of our lives, of the century, of the future, you know, where do we think the world is going? Where has it been? You know, what is the next sort of leg up, and where do we think most of the action is going to be? And, you know, if we've looked at that over the years, you know, we've looked at things, or we've pretty much identified, you know, the trends we would like to be investing in and we'd like to be involved in were some things like technology, for example. I mean, that's fairly obvious, right? Energy, consumption, and healthcare. You know, so, you know, we start with that and we say, well, you know, these are the trends, you know, that we'd like exposure to. Ultimately, the portfolios we build are what we consider to be our best perception of where we would like the world to be, a sort of world we would like to live in, you know, to put it another way. Because ultimately, as a shareholder, you're giving your capital to these companies and you are backing what it is that they do. You know, so within the context of technology and energy and consumption and healthcare, you know, we are then looking for the sorts of companies that strive to meet the sort of goals we have as investors, but also at the same time, doing good, you know, by the world and also by the various cohorts that they interact with on a daily basis, whether it be their customers, their staff members, their shareholders, etc. Now, as you can imagine, each trend has a plethora of opportunity. And depending on the strategy, whether we're looking at something like AmComp or Unicorn, for example, the filtering processes then begin. And some of the things we look for, obviously, are things like, you know, track record of performance. One thing which you might find interesting, which intuitively might make sense, but a lot of people don't often think about it this way, is that winners win. You know, companies that are successful, that have been successful, generally continue to be successful. And the reason is that these companies have, you know, gone through and survived a variety of different market and economic cycles and always managed to come out of this better, you know, than they went into it. And this is a testament to things like management, the quality of management, the adaptability of management or the business model, you know, and that kind of thing. And that provides, I think, you know, another basis or overlay of shares that we look at or companies that we look at. Track record is an important thing, you know, and you can't underestimate the potential of it. I mean, I could have a chat with you about companies which, you know, probably sound as boring as anything on the surface, but have annihilated, you know, even some of the best performing stocks of our time. And they just seem to be, you know, underrated and underappreciated. You know, after that, we obviously look at things like balance sheet strength, payout ratios, dividend consistency, dividend growth, the moat, you know, the ability of a business to compound over time. I mean, these are, you know, things again which are vitally important to the longevity of, you know, any position you want to take. And then, you know, perhaps for something which is more specific to the likes of Unicorn, you know, we look at things like, you know, debt levels, cash flows, SG&A expenses, which are basically all non-productive expenses in the business. We look at things like the rule of 40, you know, in things like SaaS companies. Now, the rule of 40 is really, it's the gold standard of companies where revenue growth and margin needs to be equal to or greater than 40. You know, it's a benchmark that, you know, some of the best growth companies in the world strive for. And, you know, all these things really form an overlay into, you know, which stocks we then add into our sort of portfolios and selection process. We then break it down into sort of factors, if you like, things like quality, growth, safety, valuation, momentum, beta, you know, and then, you know, after that, you know, we break it down into whether we consider them to be cautious, moderate, or aggressive type investments. And depending on, you know, where the company's fitting all these baskets, they then get allocated to the individual portfolios. That's really the sort of very short way, you know, of saying, you know, how we select the stocks to invest in.
Yeah, Craig, I mean, thanks. You've unpacked quite a bit to chew on there. And I think something that's still kind of a gap for me in terms of just understanding this a little bit is that, to your point on winners keep winning, right? Quite often, and you've indicated, for example, you know, you look at valuation. Quite often, if a stock's one of those winners that keep on winning, the market tends to price that in. And those are the stocks that tend to trade at these extended valuations for extended periods of time. So my question comes down to, how do you then decide on what price do you pay for some of these companies? Because from the sounds of it, I mean, a lot of the stuff you're looking at tends to look at the growth, it tends to look at the momentum, you know, your rule of 40, for example, that's a classic growth metric and construct. But at the same time, you've got to be sensitive to valuation, the price that you're paying for something. Does Enro kind of come up with a watch list? You know, when do you decide to pull that trigger? And then very importantly, in terms of deploying the capital, you know, this is something Ghost and I discussed just last week. You know, my approach personally is that, you know, if you find something that's pretty decent, you know, and if you're uncertain around the valuation, if you think it maybe could go lower, sure, you maybe stagger that input. And you maybe, you know, take a bit now. If it goes down a little bit lower, you consider if everything's still in line, you kind of take an additional position. What is Anbro's approach to those things? You know, how do you determine valuation when you're comfortable to actually pull the trigger on something? And then how do you actually go about deploying capital, assuming this is cash that's now sitting on the sidelines?
Sure. So I think what I would say is, you know, the strategy is very dynamic based on the portfolio we're talking about. You know, so if we talk briefly about the ANCOMP portfolio, which is obviously the more conservative portfolio and the one that's focusing on dividend growth and dividend payouts and dividend longevity, it's a very different animal to, say, a unicorn type stock. So valuation matters in all sort of aspects, but they matter in different ways, if I can put it that way. So if one looks at a portfolio like ANCOMP and stocks that fall into that sort of portfolio, the valuation the valuation metrics we consider there are also pretty vast and pretty diverse. But importantly, what we look for also is the company's relative valuation to its own history, say over the last 5, 10, 15 years, and also relevant to its peer group or to, you know, those companies that it tends to compete against. Obviously, these things are dynamic. You know, when interest rates are significantly lower than they are, you know, today, you know, the inputs into various valuation models obviously change and fluctuate, and companies tend to, you know, get more, I think, disparate views in terms of, you know, what the right or fair price for a stock is or a company is. But in the context of ANCOMP type stocks, you know, these portfolios don't trade at the sort of multiples that we would look at, you know, when comparing them to unicorn stocks. So again, there, you know, it's long-term valuations based on long-term, say, average multiples versus themselves, versus their peers, versus the market, that sort of thing. When it comes to, you know, investing in the portfolios, to your point, Mo, we will always take an initial investment into the portfolio, and that will be our starting position. That will serve us as a way to, you know, not only keep an eye on the stock, but to monitor the stock and the position for, you know, further additions. We'll have generally a target allocation that we'd like to get to over time. And, you know, we'll use market ebb and flows to build up that portfolio or that weighting to where we consider it to be optimal. If we then consider something like, say, the unicorn portfolio, which is a vastly different animal, there, you know, the valuation metrics are different. These sorts of stocks tend to trade at higher valuations than normal or than average sort of companies. But we look for other things there to try and justify that valuation. And top line growth is particularly important. You know, are these companies able to grow at significantly faster rates than not only inflation, but GDP and inflation, you know, the overall market that they're competing in, and also the peers that they're competing against? At the end of the day, then, yeah, that needs to be backed up by a really solid balance sheet. You know, no debt on the balance sheet, cash flows which must be positive, and also a very long runway for growth, you know, where we can see companies growing into their valuation. It's very different, you know, if one looks at a company like Costco today, you know, which is trading at a PE in the sort of stratosphere relative not only to its growth rates, but to its historic long-term average. And you compare that to, say, a company that's growing at, you know, 40 or 50% per annum, that's trading at the same multiple, is much smaller and has a much bigger runway to grow. So I know it's a long way of answering the question, but really it just depends on, you know, the portfolio we're talking about and the stock, you know, that fits into that investment profile.
Maybe just one more on that, Craig. I mean, in terms of an optimal allocation in the portfolio, you know, what kind of position sizing do you tend to consider? You know, is it a 1-2% to start off with and slowly building that up over time? How do you frame that decision?
Sure. So how we initially started with the unicorn portfolio, for example, is each stock in the portfolio came into the portfolio initially at an equal weight. You know, so it was equally weighted from inception. And, you know, that would, for example, be, you know, relatively lightweight, so say, you know, 1% per stock or per name that we put into the portfolio. Unicorn always tends to carry a pretty considerable cash balance in the portfolio due to the high beta nature of that portfolio. And that cash balance allows us to deploy capital opportunistically, as in when we see, you know, market fluctuations, market volatility, which tends to be higher for those sorts of stocks than it is, you know, say for ANCOM stocks. So once the portfolio is then equally weighted, that allows us to, you know, keep an eye on the positions, watch out for volatility, and then to build those positions up over time. We would generally tend to top out at a position weight through natural buying. A maximum position of a high conviction call would be probably about 5%. From there, the stock tends to outgrow its position over time. And that really is subject then to company-specific performance and stock performance. What is different to the unicorn portfolio in particular is we let the winners run, you know, so we don't rebalance on a quarterly basis or biannual or annual basis, just purely based on company performance or share price performance. You know, if you've picked up Amazon at $10 a share and it's now $50 a share and it's still looking like the business got an enormous runway, you know, ahead of it, we're not going to just simply reduce the position size just because it's grown. Of course, one rule of thumb we do have is if the size of any position gets too large that it keeps us up at night, you know, we will naturally, you know, look at ways of reducing that risk. But historically, in stocks in particular, and or in general, and in unicorn stocks in particular, the real money made over time is finding these real winners and just actually keeping them. And you can take that into any context. I mean, in the SA context, I mean, if one just imagines investing in something like Bidvest 20 or 25 years ago and just keeping that position, you know, over time you would have done incredibly well. And, you know, you wouldn't have had to reweight. You would have just found that one in a lifetime stock and just let it deliver. And I think that's how we like to look at it from a unicorn perspective. The ANCOM portfolio obviously is different. That's a different beast. It's more conservative. You know, there, you know, position sizes would generally top out at perhaps 3%, 3.5%. And they would be much more dynamic in terms of how we manage those positions, how we recycle capital and ensure that, you know, the overall risk profile of that portfolio or risk profile is, you know, is kept to a place where, you know, we're not too high beta and not too far off. I think just general risk considerations for the investors that, you know, that portfolio appeals to.
Craig, I think you've shared a lot of really great stuff with us today on how you guys think about these portfolios. Mo took the words out of my mouth on the last question. I wanted to also understand how you think about the weightings and all that kind of thing. So thank you. I mean, obviously this really just literally scratches the surface of portfolio construction. There are textbooks on this stuff, never mind 25-minute podcasts. But the point is that you've touched on a lot of the really important concepts, which is brilliant. And it really does give our listeners a way to go and, you know, do some more reading, go online, check out these different concepts and look at your own portfolio and consider what's happening there and what you want to change and how you want to do it going forward. I think a good place to finish off, Craig, is just, you know, how people find out about these different Anbro portfolios, because you do have a few, as you've mentioned. What is the best way to go and learn about the different options?
Sure. Well, I mean, I would suggest guys go and have a look at our website. So it's anbro.co. You know, there are links there to the different portfolios that we offer. And you have a bit more information about, you know, each one and, you know, and how they might fit into your own specific sort of risk profile. And what I would say, you know, to all investors out there that are, you know, trying to consider, you know, what their own individual appetite to risk is to think about, you know, the times that you've been invested in the markets and when markets have fallen considerably. You know, think about how you felt in that moment. You know, when, you know, markets fell 8.5% 2 weeks ago, how were you feeling? You know, when you watched the news and you saw the big red numbers everywhere, were you feeling okay with that? Were you feeling nervous? Were you feeling, you know, anxious? You know, that in itself will tell you whether your portfolio is too risky for your own risk profile without you necessarily realizing it. You know, if you sort of went through that and thought, oh, this is great, I've been waiting to, you know, to buy this dip and I've had money on the side and now I'm so excited I want to deploy that, you know, you probably have a different risk profile to someone who's thinking, you know, I've got too much invested right now, I prefer to have a higher cash balance. You know, I think and that's, there's no right answer. I think it's individual. Everyone knows what their own risk tolerances are, but normally it's during the high stress times when you actually realize what your actual risk tolerance is versus when you just talk about it, you know, with friends or your financial advisor.
Yeah, Craig, I think that's fantastic insight. And unfortunately, that's where we've got to leave it this week because we're out of time. Again, really grateful to you and the Enbro team for always coming on the show, sharing your insights, and again, just contextualizing how people should think about their wealth creation journey over time. It's not something that's static, like your portfolio, like markets. It's dynamic. It can change over time. Go and check out the website, guys. It's www.enbro.co. Reach out to the team at Enbro. They are very approachable. If you have further questions, engage with Craig, engage with Justin. They're both very approachable. And we hope to have you back on the show at some point in time in the future. For our listeners, hit us up on social media. It's at Magic Markets Pod, one word, at Finance Ghost, and at Muhammad Nalla, all on X. Or go and find us on LinkedIn and pop us a note on there. Until next week, same time, same place. Thanks and cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Ciao. Thanks, Craig. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not financial or investment advice. Please speak to your personal financial advisor.